May it please the court, Mr. Williamson. As a result of a trust account audit performed in beginning in 2012 of the trust account of attorney David Mandelbaum, the OCDC uncovered a number of instances of professional misconduct with regard to trust account transactions. Those instances of misconduct really kind of fall into two main categories, one being just the general misuse of a trust account contrary to its purpose. It's the purpose of a trust account, of course, is to have a vehicle to segregate client's money from the lawyer's own personal funds. In the present case, what Mr. Mandelbaum was doing is he was depositing earned attorney's fees into his trust account and also leaving other attorney's fees after they became earned in the trust account, allowing those fees to be to kind of linger in the account, and then was using the trust account to pay operating expenses, overhead, other sorts of personal and business matters out of the trust account. And that definitely misusing the trust account for its intended purpose. Kind of part and parcel with that is a commingling of personal proceeds and trust proceeds. And so we found a number of instances of commingling and just general misuse of the trust account.
And what was the reason for doing that?
It was related to a period of time in 2011, first part of 2012, when there were a series of levies on his personal accounts, on his business accounts, and I believe also on his family accounts by the federal IRS taxing authority and the state of Kansas taxing authorities. And so the trust account was viewed by Mr. Mandelbaum as being a place to allow him to keep an account to pay bills that were not subject to IRS levy or state of the
Despite that, the DHP found that his actions were not motivated by a dishonest or selfish purpose.
We have investigated that aspect from the standpoint of, was there any IRS proceeding against Mr. Mandelbaum? Was there any state of Kansas proceeding against Mr. Mandelbaum? We found no indication that the federal or state authorities were taking that angle, that there was some sort of fraudulent transfers or fraudulent conveyances or something like that. We always check the personal litigation history of the respondent. We didn't find any of that sort of...
So do you agree with the DHP finding on this?
Yes, I think it was no indication that to utilize a separate account, you know, if you take away the fact that it's a trust account, but it is a separate account that his business had, we don't believe that there's a per se indication of fraud just by using an account. As a matter of fact, what I think the evidence showed is that an IRS agent actually made a personal visit to the banker and discussed Mr. Mandelbaum's accounts. And so I don't know that there was any kind of deceit where the IRS wasn't aware of.
Did he use the account to avoid IRS levies, though, and didn't that to his benefit in that sense? Not that he was trying to steal it, but he benefited by avoiding levies on his assets.
Well, I think he had entered into negotiations with the IRS to resolve his tax problem. I think it was a fairly significant tax problem of over $100,000 that arose with respect to an audit of a prior 7-year period of his taxes. And so once the results of the audits became known, he had a tax problem. I think initially he tried to address it on his own, and then I think he hired counsel, and maybe multiple counsel, to assist in negotiations.
So it sounded like he did that because he was worried about a levy, but in fact he didn't hide money from the IRS that they tried to get.
There's no indication that the IRS has taken a position of hidden money or any of their own sorts of investigation.
Did he always have enough money in the trust account to cover the client monies that were in there?
Yes. What we found was there were most instances of the money in the trust account actually were his own funds. That they were, as an example, like an $11,000 deposit that was from a client for earned fees that were deposited into the account, and that he was writing checks off of that. We looked at, were there any instances of misappropriation, and by the conclusion of the investigation that concluded with his deposition in August of 2013, we found that all the money for the clients had been accounted for, and that there was not any missing money as far as the clients were concerned. It was primarily a situation of his own money in the account being used to pay non-trust expenses.
So the money he had taken that belonged to Ms. Fuller, he had given back by that point?
Yes. Let me address that in particular, because that is probably the most glaring instance of what could otherwise be a real problem. Ms. Fuller was a longtime client of the respondent. I believe he had represented her on and off for 25 years. She had recently settled a litigation matter to where she received a $25,000 settlement proceeds. She actually came to the DHP and testified, and I was somewhat surprised by it, but her testimony was to the effect that I might, at this point in time, which was the spring of 2011, she feared that she would either need the money for subsequent attorney's fees, or that she would have incurred a liability that she would need to pay out. So she told Mr. Mandelbaum, take my money, do with it whatever you want, just make sure that it's there when I need it. And I don't know that all clients would take that position with their money, but in this particular case, based on the particular testimony of that client, she allowed her proceeds to be removed from the trust account in various payments by Mr. Mandelbaum to himself. That took place in, let's say, May or June of 2011, and they were then fully repaid by August of 2011, when I believe that the client requested her money back. So she got all the money back, and it was kind of a short period of time.
And you got from her testimony that she knew he might borrow some of that money, and that was fine with her?
I don't know that the subject of borrowing specifically came up, but her testimony was basically to the effect that she said, I can't remember my exact words, but there was a conversation, use it, keep it, do whatever, I don't need it, don't give it to me. I don't know that really qualifies as I'm going to loan you the money, but
use
certainly
it, keep it, so it was,
yeah.
Is that what a trust account's for, to hold client money when there's no doubt that it's the client's entitled to it, but maybe they don't want it just yet?
Well, I think in this case, the trust account could have been properly used to retain that money, because she feared that, because of a situation that was going on in her life, that she might need to use counsel. And so she was paying it as sort of as an advance on unearned fees, or perhaps that she would need to use some of the money to settle a claim. And so in that instance, I think since there was previously an attorney-client relationship between the two of them that had lasted over a number of years, that arguably would be an appropriate use of the trust account if it was anticipated that he would continue to be her attorney throughout unasserted claim.
His use of client funds under the rules should have required something in writing and required advice to her to seek other counsel.
That's absolutely right. And so because of that, there is an admission, a stipulation by the respondent that he totally violated 4-1.8A and all of its requirements for the safeguards were not met. And so there is an acknowledgement that that was a violation, and I think there's also an acknowledgement that just as a general principle, he should not have even attempted to borrow money from a client.
Has he corrected these problems?
He has. When we had the DHP, we asked him a series of questions designed to determine the current status of his trust account. He testified that there were no more commingled proceeds in the account, that he hadn't borrowed or lent money to any clients, that he hadn't engaged in these business transactions with clients, you know, since the investigation occurred. He has taken steps to his actual trust account checks didn't even on their face show that it was a trust account. So I think he had his checks reprinted to conform to the rule on that. And he was able to certify before the DHP that he had corrected his trust account practices, and we've had no problems or overdrafts or anything of that nature since this first arose in July of 2012.
And some of his conduct was giving, loaning money or paying for client expenses to benefit the client.
That's correct.
And that was also improper, but again, would not have a selfish motive.
That's correct. It was, he received a settlement from another client matter in August of 2011, and it looks like after that, his cash flow situation improved. He paid Ms. Fuller back, and he also had some additional money that he actually advanced $1,000 to a client that was anticipating a recovery on her claim, and then about another $800 to another client in anticipation of their recoveries. And I believe there's an inference that that was sort of done out of compassion and trying to make the client happy.
But again, improper.
Yes, definitely. And he has stipulated that that was in violation of the particular rule regarding prohibition of financial assistance to clients.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Please, the court.
You may proceed.
The situation here is that Mr. Rodowski and myself are both seeking the same result. He has covered the primary allegations, I think, rather thoroughly and answered many of your questions. So I'm going to try not to repeat a lot of that. I'm sure that you don't need to hear it again. The one thing that I'm going to start with that I would like to point out to the court is this is a matter that Mr. Mandelbaum not only cooperated with, but the investigation that was conducted resulted in the filing of an information in this case. And subsequent to that filing, Mr. Mandelbaum supplied additional information, volunteered additional information to the investigative body. And I think this is important because it demonstrates a couple of things. Number one, he was cooperative with the division, and number two, it shows that he was interested in accepting responsibility for the things that he had done. There's no question about the fact he has stipulated to the violations. And I think that his cooperation and his forthcomingness after the filing of the information to continue the investigation so that it was absolutely complete and thorough indicates a desire on his part to show his remorse and to improve himself so that he could go ahead and practice law in the future.
In addition to his expression of remorse over this, are there any other mitigating and what about aggravating circumstances here?
Well, I think the mitigation is Mr. Mandelbaum has been in the practice for a number of years, as demonstrated by the testimony of Mrs. Fuller. He has loyal clients that he's represented in a more than competent way in some cases. Many of his clients, and if you look at the allegations, many of the people that, as the court noticed just a few minutes ago, he gave money to improperly, but with the motive of helping these people, are longtime clients. And I think that speaks well of him as an attorney in the practice of law. The allegations here, while they're serious, and obviously the rules are here for a purpose, nevertheless, they are not involved with his legal skills and representing his clients. And I think that the stipulation that was entered into, the sanctions that were agreed to in that stipulation, demonstrate not only the significance of the violations that were committed by Mr. Mandelbaum, but they also provide rather stringent supervision over this particular aspect of his practice.
What about his prior disciplinary history?
Pardon?
What about his prior disciplinary history?
He has prior disciplinary history. He had two admonitions back, I think, in 2000. There was also a reprimand that was entered, I believe, in 2008. Significantly, though, all of those were back in the 90s, the conduct that resulted in the admonitions and the reprimand took place prior to 2000. So he's gone for a period of 14, 15 years in representing his clients in an admirable way from the standpoint of those folks that we hear from and the information that we have from the investigation. And I join with the informant and ask that the court follow the recommendation of the DHP. I think that the information in the record and the evidence presented to them justify this as an appropriate sanction to be levied in connection with these kinds of offenses.
Is there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know that I have much to rebut, but I will kind of expand upon the aggravating circumstances just so that the record is clear on that. The stipulation does reflect, and it's probably not much of a stretch to suggest that there was a pattern of misconduct. The instances of commingling occurred throughout the one-year period of the audit. It wasn't just one time. It was numerous times. We also found multiple offenses: commingling, misuse, undocumented trust account transactions. Mr. Mandelbaum first entered the practice of law in, I believe, 1986. This conduct that we're talking about here today would have occurred in 2011, 2012, so by that point in time there was substantial experience in the practice of law. And as Mr. Williamson addressed, there is prior discipline. The reprimand does touch upon the rules on conflict of interest. So we feel that there's a little bit of additional concern because of the prior history also involving conflict of interest. We have in the present case, a conflict of interest that basically is a borrowing of client money. And so those we would feel would be the significant aggravating circumstances. But having said that, we are encouraged by the respondent's willingness to correct and improve his practices, and by his testimony at the hearing, it appears he's off to a good start in that regard.
And you recommend a state suspension, is that correct?
Yes. For a state suspension for a two-year period, The disciplinary panel allowed us to provide the conditions of probation, and they are very stringent. They have the usual stuff, malpractice insurance, ethics school, quarterly reporting. We also have a set of probation requirements for specific to trust account problems, and that would require that Mr. Mandelbaum have a trust account mentor to help him set up a trust account proceeding or system, and that mentor would probably be a lawyer. There's also what we would call a trust account monitor, which could be more like an accountant or a bookkeeper that would review the trust account activity on a periodic, monthly or quarterly basis. And then we also would have the supervision and oversight of the OCDC's office and the ability to do random audits of the trust account.
No further questions.